Episode 130 of the TV Dudes podcast, recorded April 27th, 2017.
Everything is awesome.
With a brand new episode. We are back in the Nerdatorium, Randy's Nerdatorium.
That's right, you recorded somewhere else last week.
And it was, it was cool recording there. It was me, Kyle, and Mike Moody. Mike, you're back!
Hey, I'm back!
Yeah! Anyway, it was cool recording there, except that it was super echoey.
Yeah.
So, audio is dampened in a room that is filled wall-to-wall with comic books here.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that most music is produced in studios filled with comic books.
Is that what they do?
Yeah, that's to dampen the sound. It's what you do. You get a bunch of comics, graphic novels, some toys, if you want to do toys.
I never thought about how, I was like, we don't really pick up background noise in here. It's just dead.
Yeah.
But these books... Like, seriously, folks who aren't watching the live stream that we've never once put up in here, walls are lined with so many books. How many books do you think you have in here?
A lot. I don't know numbers.
You're not like Fenton Crackshell. What's his name?
Who the hell is Fenton? Is that...
You don't know Fenton Crackshell?
Is that... Am I right by the name?
I don't know who the hell you're talking about.
What from, are you talking DuckTales? About?
No.
Oh, my God. That's a deep reference, man.
I want to say it's Fenton Crackshell, the nerdy guy who becomes Gizmo Duck.
Okay.
And he can count everything immediately. Like, he can just look at something and be like, that's 555,000 whatever
books. You know what's awesome?
What?
I've never seen DuckTales, and so to me it sounds like you're having a stroke right now.
You know, people who watch it might also think I am. I could be way off on the name, too.
You're just, like, making shit like this whole thing that's happening only in your head. It's like we're in Legion, and you're seeing the Shadow King tell you things.
Launchpad McQuack is both in that and Darkwing Duck.
I know of Launchpad McQuack, and the reason I know of that is because it's referenced in Scott Pilgrim.
Huh? Well, that's really the only... You never watched Darkwing Duck?
I never watched Darkwing Duck.
Darkwing Duck was not in DuckTales.
No. You Launchpad was...
Yeah, Launchpad was, but Darkwing had his own show.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Did I speak?
Yeah.
The Venn diagram here, though, is people who know Darkwing Duck, people who know DuckTales, people know neither, and we're all in different parts of the Venn
Get
diagram.
Get your ducks in a row, man.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Apologies.
So, this episode, we're talking about ducks, just everything related to ducks, folks. I hope that you guys strapped
you
in.
You guys think Howard the Duck's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
We'll talk about that on the Patreon.
Okay.
Patreon's going to be duck-themed, too.
I said that we're going to talk about ducks, but I have no agenda. So we're just gonna have to wing it.
Wing.
And there's gonna be a hefty fee for this. I'll just put it on
no,
your bill.
No,
I did it.
No,
I said it.
Oh, you got it before me.
Oh boy.
Well, okay. What news items have you plucked from the internet?
Nice, nice, but it's not news time.
Everyone just turned off the podcast. They're all done,
folks. We are talking about four fucking amazing shows. I'm super excited about this. We're talking about Silicon Valley, which is back on HBO. We're talking about Fargo, which is back on FX. We are talking about the second episode of The Leftovers, because I'm not going to shut up about it. And we're going to talk about the third episode of Better Call Saul.
You know, because what? I'm not going to shut up about it.
True. I'm thinking maybe I should put the third episode of The Leftovers, or the second discussion of Leftovers, we should just do that separately.
Because
I wrote out stuff I wanted to discuss. It's gross. It's gross how much I want to discuss it. But it could just be a super long segment. Anyway, we are the TV Dudes. I'm Grant.
I'm Randy.
And I'm Mike.
And Mike is Mike Moody of Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
Podcast Network, as well as Marvel Binge TV.
Marvel TV Binge, motherfucker.
Fuck it up.
Every time.
I'm a mess. Anyway, also the Mr. Robot O podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your other ones?
I have a new podcast coming out called TV on the Pod. It's TV all about TV podcasting. You guys are on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's launching a couple weeks.
Too many podcasts, man.
Too many.
Anyway, no such thing.
Before we get into all of our stuff, guys, I want to say that there's a couple ways you guys can support us. iTunes, go over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write a review. We'll read that here on the show.
Gentlemen, can I get a little maybe Battle Hymn of the Republic or the anthem hummed for me?
I can give you DuckTales.
Okay, let's do that.
Life is like a
So, folks,
hurricane.
We haven't had a lot of reviews. So Grant just told me we have not had any reviews on since October on iTunes. We know you love us. We can feel the love. Plus, you support us on Patreon. So we ask you to please go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, write us a review. Grant will read anything you put up there. Oh, anything. So do it for yourself. Do it for the TV dudes. Do it for the Permanent Record Network. Do it for America.
Wow, that was nice. And I forgot the words to the rest of that song. Yeah, but Mike and I think carried it for the most part.
We did all right.
Another way you guys can help support us is over at patreon.com/TV Dudes. There you guys can make a per episode pledge. And in exchange, I can't say that part, but in exchange, you guys can get bonus exclusive podcasts. We do little mini podcasts about up to 30 minutes each episode, and we're just kind of talking about anything but TV generally.
Yep.
That's our one rule, since we talk about everything TV here on the podcast, anything that's a catch-all, something. Last week, we talked about that unicorn frappuccino, among other things.
Yeah, that was a great subject you picked.
I feel like it started off good and then kind of went off the rails. But anyway, that's up there and people get to hear it. We have two new pledges this week. Samuel Evans, welcome. Thank you very much. And what's this one say here? What's that guy?
That's me.
Mike Moody is now a patron.
What?
Give us all your money. I think this is us finally getting our paycheck from Permanent.
Oh, is that what that is? Good. Yeah. Great. That's good.
Yeah. New revenue stream for you. Congratulations.
Sweet. Well, thank you, buddy. I hope you enjoy your conversation with us this week.
It's the only way I get to listen to it. So, yeah.
All right.
Grant.
Damn it.
You're forgetting a third way that people can support us.
There was no third way last week.
I know. You know, it was a third and fourth way, maybe I should suggest this week. No, third
all right,
week.
What we
okay.
got? What we got?
So, I've become kind of a fan of the Fast and Furious movies of late.
Oh, yeah.
I sort of dove hard into that one.
I saw you binge.
Yes, I did. Now, in the seventh one, they do something kind of crazy. They drop a bunch. Okay.
Yeah, that's zany, only the seventh one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it takes seven movies to get to crazy and Furious.
It does get crazier as it goes along. In the seventh one, they drop a bunch of cars out of a plane with a parachute.
Yes.
Sure.
And what I think is great about this is a marketing opportunity is what you can do. You can go to those car wraps where you like do a big wrap of the TV dudes, mm-hmm. You know, each of our faces. We've got all those, that great art that Kyle did for us and you mocked up for us of all our faces. You pay to put a wrap on a custom car, probably comes some kind of cool hot rod. You drop it out of a plane that skywrites the TV dudes. Everybody's watching already. Okay. Then they watch this car plummet to the earth. Oh, there should be a parachute in the car. Car hits the ground, drives up, and they see the TV dude just driving through town.
That'd be kind of cool.
That'd be a great promotional gimmick. I think you should totally. Someone should do that.
I mean, I feel like that's the most expensive one you've come up with.
You think so? You think that's the most expensive?
I think it is.
You guys can do it yourself with all that Patreon money coming
that's
in.
That's right.
Yeah. Butter sculptures. Yeah, if you're crafty enough at Luby's, you can do that for free. But this one, that one's going to cost some people some money.
That's true. I was gone for a week. I wanted to step it up a bit.
Well, thank you. All right. Last but not least, we want to say that as part of the Permanent Record Network.
Permanent Record.
There we go. We are promoting some of our other shows on the network each week. And for this month, we are promoting Pilot Watching with Key and Clyde. You guys can go check out Pilot Watching, and it's at pilotwatching.com or at permanentrcrd.com.
Permanentrcrd.com.
And each week, they do a little banter. They talk about some news, talk about the haps in the TV world, and then they also delve into a particular new pilot that they're checking out.
There are a lot of pilots, it turns out.
Yeah. I'd say almost every single show has one.
What?
Is that true?
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah.
According to Kyle, Ghostbusters... the real Ghostbusters on Netflix does not have a real pilot.
Really?
It has a 4-minute pitch, and then it goes into the show.
Okay.
I would say that 4-minute pitch.
That's the pilot.
Right?
Yeah, it's the pilot.
Yeah. Whatever, Kyle. Anyway, let's move on to listener questions. If you guys like us on Facebook, like us on Twitter. We post up questions. I actually posted it on Twitter, so I'm saying it. I'm advertising Twitter.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Our Twitter handle is @TVDudes. And we're also at TV/TVDudes on Facebook.com.
If you ever see something on Twitter from TV Dudes, it's probably Grant.
Yeah.
I don't Twitter well.
I think I revoked your privileges.
That seems fair. That's probably a good idea.
Our first question comes to us from Mike S. Chung, who says, I plan on naming my firstborn child after you, Grant Davis, because of your sexy and silly voice. That's how it's written. I had to do the voice.
That's not in there at all. That's just you.
No, he seriously says that he's going to name his firstborn child after.
Yeah, that part's there.
Yeah.
So is that part written in Comic Sans? Or why are you talking like that?
I was just wondering if you could talk a little about the trials and tribulations with raising a child.
You've got a story from today.
Oh, man. my hide-and-seek story?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So I was playing hide-and-seek with my two little girls. One is 4 years old, just turned four, and the other is a year and a half. And we were playing a few rounds. It was kind of fun. The youngest one can't really do it. So, I'll take her and put her places and let the older one go and find us.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. So my older one, she decides that she's going to go to the bathroom, but it's her turn to count. So she's going to go pee real quick, and then she'll come and find us.
Mm-hmm. I like this story. Cool.
So I pick up the other one, and I run to the other bathroom, and I set her quietly in the shower. And I say, here, hide in the shower. And I close the shower curtain. She's all happy about it. She's excited. And then I run into the other room, and I have a sweet spot. I'm hiding. I have a blanket pulled over me. She's not going to find me for at least a couple minutes. Anyway, a couple minutes go by.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what the hell? What's going on? I go into the first bathroom where she is, and she's just wrapped up not peeing. You know, taking care of other bathroom business.
Yep, uh-huh.
And I'm like, oh, no. I had to help attend to that.
Yep.
Usually that would be one of those where she calls me in to help her. Uh-huh. And I'm like, oh, shit, literally. And then as I'm helping her, I hear splashing and giggling going on, and I go, oh, fuck, run into the other bathroom, and the littlest one is just having the time of her life splashing and playing in the toilet there. Like, no! This is the worst game of hide and seek. Anyway, so kids are great. Kids are great, and every day is precious. It's just a precious.
Yeah, this is why I do not have kids. I have a bunny.
Yeah,
the bunny does shit, but the shit is little, you know, marbles that you can pick up really easily.
They're adorable.
So yeah. Grant, in defense of your kids,
okay,
I don't want to say there was a picture posted in which you had dressed them up as Hall and Oates.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like maybe that was revenge. Like, I don't know, but
you don't know how disappointed that I was that that my oldest smiled in that picture.
You don't know. You gotta give the cold the blue steel.
Yeah, they both have to be serious. Yeah. I was like, don't smile. That was the best one I had because the other one was crying. She didn't like the way.
Actually, I think Oates cried a lot of those album photos.
Okay, well then I feel a lot better about it.
Yeah.
Okay, our next question comes to us from Ross Brown, who says, to this day, I haven't seen a single episode of Breaking Bad. Not because of lack of interest, but because there's just so much TV. Do any of you have a popular or acclaimed show that for some reason you've just never seen?
I was trying to think if I had any. The one I can think of is Parenthood. I've never seen as much as a minute of Parenthood. It's got a great cast. It's by Jason Kadams, who did Friday Night Lights. Have you guys seen Parenthood?
Yep.
No.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know it's good. I just I haven't had time for it. There's lots of shows I haven't finished, like the one about the secret computer that picks out people to save.
Person of interest.
That's it. Right. Yeah.
Secret computer. I love your descriptions of
that show. That's actually the original title. That's the only time I remember.
Season of that. American Crime, I still haven't gotten around to watching any of.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want to.
I've seen a couple episodes that I liked it. I've seen an episode of American Horror Story. I've seen an episode of a few other shows that I like. I watch one episode. I've never seen Scandal, which I don't know how acclaimed that is, but it is one that everybody watches.
Scandal or Empire. I haven't watched any of those.
Is Peaky Blinders acclaimed? Because I was thinking, that's the one that I have not seen.
It's one of those things that's been on my radar, but I haven't watched. Yeah. There's a few others.
You're the worst. I haven't seen a single episode of. So.
You are the worst.
I know, and you tell me this every time. I haven't seen any of Broad City yet.
What?
It's so crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on in either of these shows, really.
See, that's what you need, is something on that level, because Breaking Bad is one of those, like, everyone should have seen Breaking Bad and The Wire and a few other shows.
The Sopranos.
Mad Men.
Oz, Deadwood.
Yep.
Yeah, anything.
It's a big list. It's a big list, actually, apparently.
The Walking Dead.
Yeah, all of Walking Dead. Every single episode.
You're going to be disappointed, but you still at least should have seen some of
Fear
it.
Fear the Walking Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead. Every episode.
Pass.
You have to watch it forward and backwards.
Yeah. Kyle Volte says, "Hey, TV dudes. Since shows like Feud or The People vs. O.J. Simpson are essentially modern-day miniseries, are there any miniseries from the 70s or 80s that you'd like to see redone?"
Mike, you got any?
Oh, gosh, from back then.
See, because my first thought is V. I want V done as a cool-ass miniseries,
but they did
a crap-ass version of it, and I want them to do a good-ass version of it.
That was a terrible show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a terrible show.
It was really poorly done, and it was in the Lost era, too.
Yeah.
And I think it had Marina Baccarin from Firefly.
It had good people in it?
Yeah, it had good people in it, but...
It was terrible.
Oh, man.
It was really awful.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with something that's very much in the current conversation right now.
Yeah?
Perfect Strangers. I want it as a miniseries.
But that wasn't a miniseries that you can resurrect, but okay.
That was an exceptionally long miniseries, Grant.
I want it
seven-year miniseries.
As a miniseries,
yes.
Yeah, they're having a moment, aren't they? Mark Lynn Baker is, at least.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. If we're repurposing, I want a Three's Company miniseries. That's what. Give me that. Give me a Three's Company miniseries. No, I don't want to see somebody try and be
John Ritter now.
Yeah, that's true. You don't want that.
Benjamin Hamill says, "Have you guys been watching Feud or FX, by the way? I'm surprised at how much I ended up loving it. Feud is definitely one of my favorite shows of the year so far."
I have seen two episodes of it, and I was surprised by how much I liked it, but it sort of fell off my watching radar because we are in, like, super peak TV right now.
Yeah, April is so clogged right now. So many premieres, and Feud came out, I think, in March, didn't it? So
yeah.
It's just backed up on my DVR.
I haven't watched all the Americans yet, guys. That's how backed up I am on TV.
Yeah, me too.
Everyone is giving really solid reviews of both Feud and Big Little Lies over on HBO.
Yeah, which I watched the first episode and didn't like, but now I kind of want to watch the rest of.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And a lot of people liked this last season of Girls, too, which I was surprised.
Those people are wrong.
But I'd have to, slog through the other seasons just to get there, I think.
I didn't see the latest season of Girls, but the last two seasons are really solid, really good storytelling.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you.
I totally recommend it.
Well, Zach McLernan says, "Oh, Grades and Powerful TV dudes. And the more or less acceptable mic."
Oh,
hey. "High Blasphemer from Permanent Record.
Permanent Record.
And Marked One by the Faceless Men. A few years ago, you professed before the TV gods, the old and the new, that FX was the best network on TV. As the standard TV season draws to a close and the summer season draws near, has FX continued to maintain its dominance, or has it fallen behind a new rival? And if so, whom and why?"
FX still dominates, and because that one word is legion. Nothing was better than Legion the first quarter of 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, Legion, The Americans, this season of Fargo, we only have two episodes. Yep. And I know it's already going to be as good, if not better, than the previous. I mean,
now, if you want to argue against it from a devil's advocate standpoint,
The Strain.
And Taboo. And there haven't been like a lot of new breakouts. Like the FX does not have a deep bench right now, but everything they've got is pretty great.
What's that Man versus Love or some shit?
I don't remember.
Man Seeking Woman.
Which
that
I actually
canceled.
Oh, did it? Yeah. I actually found that pretty funny. I liked the first season. I never watched the second.
Did they cancel
one.
Sex and Drugs and Rock and Roll?
Oh yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
that's the thing. FX has some anchors dragging it down, but its heights are so high. The only one that's close to it is HBO, right?
Do you think HBO is better?
No. I can't quite. Nothing on HBO. I don't love anything on HBO as much as I love Fargo and Legion. But I do love Game of Thrones, Veep, Silicon Valley, Leftovers, Westworld.
I love those potentially more.
Not me. Fargo and Legion are my favorite shows far and away.
It's funny, I can think about shows that I love, but rarely do I think about the channel or the network or the brand. I'm just not there anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Netflix, it's great, and then sometimes, they're cranking out so much stuff that dilutes that greatness. I don't know.
Yeah, I I still would declare FX the best network on TV. I think the only thing that's challenging them is HBO.
Yeah. All right. Our final question comes to us from Shlomo Willick, who says, "Hi, dudes. Was just wondering if you could replace President Donald Trump with King Joffrey from Game of Thrones. Would you?"
What the fuck kind of Sophie's Choice is that?
Oh, Joffrey's... Oh. This is going to be a spoiler.
Joffrey's corpse? Yeah, we're far enough past it for that not to be a spoiler, I think. Yeah. We're good.
Joffrey or Trump?
Live Joffrey versus live Trump?
I mean, I feel like at least with Trump, he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, so he's inept.
Yeah.
Whereas Joffrey was evil.
Yeah, that's the thing. Trump is cruelly evil indifferent and narcissistic. Joffrey was actively cruel.
Yeah.
He enjoyed. He had a sadistic streak that I don't know that for Trump to have a sadistic streak, he would have to give a shit and realize other people existed, and he doesn't do that. Joffrey actually knew people existed and hated them.
We don't do politics discussion here on the main show, but I will say I just read something about how Trump was considering pulling out of NAFTA, American Free Trade, and he had to have all of these advisors come in and point out on maps, here, these are the people that are going to be affected here in the U.S. These are Trump supporters that you're really going to hurt. Here are all the bad things. Why you shouldn't do this? And he's like, okay.
Guys, let me pause on another one for you. Trump, but instead of Steve Bannon being his advisor, Cersei, which one do you take?
I am on season 2 of Game of Thrones, so I can't. I'm not even going to posit an answer.
I mean, everyone hates Bannon, so
yep.
I'll keep Bannon.
No, like,
he's also kind of on the outs.
I think you keep Cersei, because Cersei would be able to get shit done. And her agenda would probably, it's not as bad as Bannon's agenda. So I think Cersei, with
what do
Trump
you think
in charge,
her agenda would be
Just to protect her kids and to put herself on the Iron Throne.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you think about it that way, maybe.
I think Cersei would be, she's a woman, so I'd rather have her than another white dude.
Yeah, she's not trying to completely dismantle the state as we know it.
Yeah, I think. There might be some fireworks. I'm not trying to want to spoil anything for Mike later on. There might be some issues that go on with Cersei if she was in charge. But I don't know. I feel like if Cersei or Bannon, I'd take Cersei.
Guys, I don't know. This whole discussion is giving me anxiety. Let's take a break.
I don't want to panic everybody here.
It's too late. That Game of Thrones Trump thing.
Well, I've got some bad news for TV fans.
Oh, no.
Powerless has been canceled.
What show?
Powerless.
Did you guys actually like this show?
No, it's terrible.
Okay, good.
It's a terrible
good,
show.
Good, 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 good.
What was Powerless?
You remember how DC Comics was like, hey, we're tired of failing in the movies. We're going to try and fail on TV, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that was their show. Powerless.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
I remember it. Yeah. Okay, good riddance.
I don't know how you take a show that's got Alan Tudyk and Danny Pudi and make it so terrible, but somehow they managed. That show was terrible. I only saw one episode.
That was enough.
From everything I heard, it did not get better.
Yeah.
And it has been canceled.
Adios, Powerless. Yes.
That show was like the one guy in your group of friends who's just like me.
Yeah.
It was terrible.
Yeah, it was really
so
hard to watch.
Yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg is teaming up with J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot Productions for a new comedy called The Market. He will write, star in, and direct the half-hour single-camera series. Follows a recently widowed man named Howard Katzman, who moves to Pittsburgh to live with his adult son, Stan. Oh, Stan is played by Eisenberg, so we don't know who Howard Katzman is. Both men simultaneously lose their jobs due to the changing American economy and are thrust into an unforgiving job market. This sounds like The Odd Couple, but with a father and son, maybe?
Okay.
Did you say Eisenberg is writing and directing?
Eisenberg is writing and directing and starring.
I guess he's written some other things as well. I just wasn't aware.
I don't know. I nothing that jumps out at me. I can't remember anything like,
I don't know if he writes movies or he writes plays regularly. But
Does he write bad poetry? Is that all he writes?
I don't know. He writes Laffy Taffy jokes.
He writes in his diary, "Dear Diary, why does everybody think I'm Michael Cera?"
As long as he didn't write Batman versus Superman and just starred in it, I'm okay.
Nobody wrote Batman versus Superman.
No. You know, I was arguing that he was at least a memorable performance in that movie. As comical as he was, at least I remembered him.
If someone came out and shit on the stage, it'd be a memorable performance. That doesn't make it good.
G.G. Allen would argue otherwise.
But anyway, I don't know.
Him in a comedy? We'll see.
You know, I did like him in Zombieland, which at least is comedic.
Yeah, it's pretty funny in Zombieland.
Yeah. And he was good in Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
And Arrested Development is a comedy. And
I think you've switched over to
the
wrong guy again.
You got it?
All right. I actually liked him in American Ultra.
I've never seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
That was a fun movie.
No, that's Michael Cera.
Oh, no.
Get to the next story.
Barry Levinson's 1997 political satire, Wag the Dog, is getting revamped for the modern era, which seems weird because I don't really think there's anything to be said about, like, politics and media manipulation right now. No. I feel like that's not really in the zeitgeist. But anyway, they're going to do a half-hour scripted comedy on HBO.
Best of luck, guys.
Levinson's going to direct the pilot. He'll executive produce alongside Robert De Niro. And they say it's an ode to the classic film, but moving the weapons of mass distraction beyond politics and into business, entertainment, and, yes, nonprofits. In the 21st century, with the tools of social media at their hands, nothing is off limits to a small group of operators when it comes to manufacturing reality. Fake news is so yesterday. I hope it's as good as The Brink.
Ouch!
Did you guys see the movie? Have you seen the movie?
Yes, the movie's fun.
The movie's great, and it doesn't have that, I don't know, really turned up to 11 comedy that The Brink had.
Flop sweat.
There it is. Yeah. It did not have that. And of course, the main reason to watch that movie, Wag the Dog, is the main performances by, you got De Niro and Dustin Hoffman working off each other.
So here's the question. Are they going to do like a straight up like buddy comedy type thing with the two operators, or will they do more of an ensemble like that Showtime show?
Veep.
No. The one that Don Cheadle was in.
House of Lies.
Oh, that was all about spin doctors and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I can see a version of that, but good. It's HBO. They rarely miss, and when they do, it's The Brink.
Sorry, I'm not listening to you anymore because Two Princes is playing in my head. Never mention spin doctors ever again. It's the worst.
I'm just thinking about Bad Goatees and Turtlenecks.
Is that another band? Bad Goatees and Turtlenecks?
Oh, yeah. That's the singer's solo effort.
that was their comedy. That was their music festival. 13 Reasons Why is nearing a season 2 renewal.
So this is bad. Why? I haven't seen the show. You tell me without spoiling?
Well, okay, here's the premise of the show, is that a girl kills herself. She commits suicide in high school, and her suicide note is 13
cassette tapes
or seven, you know, half sides, whatever.
Wait, cassette tapes?
Yeah. Okay.
Does this take place in 1982?
It actually make a point of it.
The book did.
Okay.
The book was a YA novel. It was written about, I think, 10 or 15 years ago, and so that's why they're cassette tapes.
Okay.
And she does make a point of, like, they wanted to have cell phones and that kind of thing, so they updated it, but there's a point as to why she used tapes. Okay. Yeah.
Forgive me for being the 100th person in the world who asked that.
So. It's fine. She records on these cassette tapes, and then it's the 13 reasons, or the 13 people that drove her to commit suicide, and it kind of wraps up with her at the end committing suicide. I hope that's not a spoiler to anyone who thought maybe it's going to be like
revealed Titanic that she's alive
or some shit. I don't know. But anyway,
she's a ghost.
It's a series like
that's season 2. She's a ghost.
I feel like we should do a video called 13 Reasons Why Not.
Yeah.
And why not have a second season?
Okay.
13 Reasons Why I'm a Ghost.
here's my argument. They did two things to set up what a second season could look like.
Sure.
And I think that given how well they did sort of teen melodrama and that kind of thing, without the narration and the 13 Reasons stuff, it could still work. It could still be an examination of, you do the flip side of bullying, you do not the suicide, but the homicide that sometimes comes out of it. There's more to say, and you could use this as a vehicle. Will they pull it off? I don't know, and it makes me a little nervous. I'd rather have it as a one season and done kind of gem. But I'm not willing to write it off wholesale until I see it, because I think there's material in what they left there.
Well, you know, your boy Reggie from Riverdale is already jumping ship to be on board 13 Reasons Why.
I know, and they're going to recast him in Riverdale because of it.
I mean, was he good and prominent in that show? I don't even know.
Nah, he was a pretty minor character, but he's got a major
role, obviously.
I do want to suggest. That I know that usually with TV seasons, you don't change the name. That's like more of a movie sequel thing. Mm-hmm. I think second season should be called 13 More Reasons Why. Or Reasons 14 through 26.
So is this going to be a continuation or like an American Crime thing? Or
anthology? No, it's a continuation.
Okay. Reasons 14 through 26 would be the best.
That'd be the best, right? What if someone discovers there's more tapes? Then it's just a whole season of all their awful things that happened to her. And she's like,
be good, because at least they wouldn't lose that actress. She was fantastic. And
she just starts like, I know I'm already dead. And I know I told you the whole story, but there's more. This one guy, I made cupcakes and he said they were dry.
13 Reasons Why I Faked My Death.
13 Reasons Why I Faked My Death.
Oh, man. It becomes Alias, or she's a spy.
Yes. Oh, my God. By season four, she's a spy. She's a ghost spy, because we already established she's a ghost.
Ghost, yeah.
Be talking about these four shows in order. First, we're going to kick things off with Silicon Valley. Then we will follow it up with Fargo, followed by The Leftovers, and then wrapping it up like every week with Better Call Saul. First up, Silicon Valley is back, guys, and it is its third season?
I believe it's third.
It's the fourth
season. Fourth season, you're right. It's fourth season, yep.
All right, well, what'd you guys think?
I liked it, although it wasn't like when Veep came back where I was just so happy to have it back. I think Silicon Valley generally rides below Veep for me.
Really?
Until the end of the season, when I wind up liking Silicon Valley better. That always happens to me. This happened to every season, I think.
What do you think, Mike?
It was great. I mean, confession, I've only seen the first two seasons, so I jumped to watch this premiere. Because I just, you know, I figured it's a comedy, you know, I don't really need all the backstory too much, right?
Nope, you need the backstory.
I don't think so. I mean, they did a really good wrap up of the previous season.
Yeah.
And okay. I don't know, I kind of feel it, you know, and at the end of this one where Thomas Middleditch's character kind of goes off on his own, I still felt like the emotional pangs of it, like, oh, he's leaving the crew behind a little bit, even though.
Yeah, I think they did a great job kind of emphasizing that.
Yeah.
I loved it. I am so invested in these characters that to just see them all back like this.
Yeah,
it was really exciting. I think that they kind of dropped Guilfoyle and Dinesh a bit in this. Like they're kind of just playing some minor roles in the
but they're clearly going to have a big story going on.
Yeah. I mean, it establishes where they're going and how that's going to be a competitive or maybe an antagonistic force at sometimes to
right.
Thomas Middleditch, whatever the lead guy's character's name is.
Blanking on it now.
How long has the douche investor been gone?
Russ Hanneman? He was gone for one season. Now he's back.
So glad he's back.
He wasn't in last season, was he?
I think he popped up last season. Like maybe once or twice. Like he was trying to make a play for something. And
the scene was so good.
When he shows up and he's cursed at the kid's school. And he's like, oh, man. Yeah. here's my one issue with Silicon Valley.
Okay.
Does anybody else feel a little bit Entourage-y occasionally? Like, everything always works. Everything doesn't work out for them. Yeah. It's a little bro-y.
Yeah.
I never feel like... I feel like nothing works out for them. I feel like they always are, like, fucking themselves over right at the last minute on everything. Yeah,
But they always kind of... They come together again, and they get their... Like, there's no point at which I'm like, oh, these poor guys are going to move back to their parents' houses because their company didn't work. I'm like, these guys are going to be rich.
What would be the show?
You know, Vince is always going to do the movie.
Exactly.
And he's always going to be okay. Yeah, I do kind of feel that every time I get to the end of this.
They're all still living in the shit house, and they're all constantly shitting on each other and being treated by shit, like shit by everyone else.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like it's... The bros winning all the time.
That's fair.
And patting each other on the back like in Entourage. Entourage just became watch these dudes hang out with babes at parties. Yeah. And that's all it was. And it was just so douchey.
Yeah, that's true.
I was disappointed when I tuned into this premiere after skipping the last two seasons to see that they're still kind of at the same place.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I thought we were going to see ongoing, you know, business entrepreneurship, a building thing.
You kind of want them to be at that point, like the young Hooli. You want them to be like
there you go.
Hiring, you know, a season where they hire a bunch of people who don't work out.
Well, they did that last season. They had their office. They built up. They hired a bunch of people.
That's true.
They lost all of it.
That's true. Yeah, that's
they
true.
Did the other thing where they built a product that they were about to launch, and then they got sued and lost their product, and they couldn't do anything.
Right.
So, I mean, I appreciate how it feels like there's a lot of these real business problems that I don't fully understand, but that have to be grappled with by any sort of startup, and they're dealing with them, and... They don't have any business savvy in order to kind of pull this stuff off.
I think one of the things that makes Silicon Valley work really well is the cast is so good.
Yeah.
Like any one of these guys could headline. TJ Miller could headline a show. Kumail Nanjiani could headline a show. Martin Starr could headline a show. I'm not sure about the guy who plays Jared. He might not be able to headline a show. But everybody else, they could be the lead in their own show. And instead they're all put together as this like massive entourage of a ensemble cast.
Quit saying entourage.
Sorry, Randy. Sorry. Ensemble. It's not entourage. Ensemble. Can I tell you my favorite moment though? It wasn't with the main cast.
Yeah.
It was the passive aggressive off between Jack Barker and the head of Hooli. His like wanting desperately to prove that he was right, that you're not, it's not shorter to fly through Jackson Hole and spending all this money. And his head of security being like, really? You're going to do this?
Do five more flights. And then more than we'll average up.
And then sending him down to the cage down below where they'd previously they'd visit. That killed me. That was my favorite part
of the
first episode.
It's a really good role for Tobolowsky too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good seeing him back.
I love when the elephant dies and his assistant, maybe it was in the last episode or the season three finale. She's like, I'm not sure if you should be using live animals to make all of your points. And he's like, you're fired. Get out of here. Anyway, I'm excited to have it back. And let's talk about Fargo.
Yeah.
Which, you know, once again, this is changing it up. Whole new cast. Whole new story. Slightly different location. Still up in the North Dakota sort of
Minnesota.
Area. Minnesota.
Yeah.
Area.
Yep.
And... Randy, turn to you. What do you think here?
I love this show. And season three, the first episode, I've seen the first two. Mike and I have both seen the first two.
Why don't we just say you love Noah Hawley?
I do love Noah Hawley.
He lives in Austin? Did you know that?
I do know that. I don't know what his address is, not for lack of trying.
Well,
kidding. I'm not stalking Noah Hawley. I actually have tried to interview him twice in 2 years at ATX Fest, and I've been turned down both times.
Really?
Just interview him while he's here in town.
I tried that too.
Okay.
I really want to talk to Noah Hawley because, this guy is he makes my favorite TV. And the Coen brothers make some of my favorite movies. And so you mix Noah Hawley with things I already love, like X-Men comics or Coen brothers movie, and you get these perfect TV shows to me. And I think the general wisdom, I don't know if this is true, but I think the general wisdom is that Fargo season one was better than Fargo season two. Is that true, you guys think?
I thought it was the other way around.
Is it really?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know necessarily. I mean, I would just give it to the first season for establishing things, I guess.
I don't really rank them, but I thought the people generally liked season one better than season two. But I think season three is off to a pretty amazing start. First of all, the cast is great. Ewan McGregor playing twins. One of them is successful. One of them is not. One of them has this stringy haired comb over. Like they are nasty mustache. They're giving the Americans a run for their money in the wig department in this one. That's fantastic.
It's really convincing.
Yeah, it's really
and
good.
And he's a younger brother.
Yeah,
but he looks like 10 years older.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a parole officer. That's definitely going to age him.
Right. Yeah.
And then Carrie Coon, who's great in everything she's ever in.
Yay.
I think she might be on the show we're talking about this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah. We'll see if we'll talk about that.
And
one.
Technology doesn't work for her on this show, just like it didn't work for her in The Leftovers.
Maybe it's Carrie Coon. Maybe she can't use technology.
She can't do technology.
If you're trying to get a good Wi-Fi signal, do not hang out with Carrie Coon.
Mary and Elizabeth Winstead as the awesomely named Nikki Swango.
All these names are bonkers.
Oh, they're all great. The Stussies, Gloria Bergel. Nikki Swango is my favorite character so far because she's in this relationship with this loser guy because he's her parole officer, but she clearly like she can pick locks. She's done time. She's quick witted. She's a con woman. She plays bridge competitively. Like she is clearly like the smart one.
She's a murderer.
She's a murderer. When the opportunity arises, this is her first murder. If we're to believe her,
you know, she is a very intriguing character because you're watching this and you're like, okay, there's no way she loves Ray.
But I think she does.
But then you're like, but she does. You know? Or this is a really good con job.
That's what I love about it is that, I think the obvious thing would be if, you know, every time we see her, she, you know, when he leaves, she breathes a sigh of relief and she could drop the con. But we've seen her without him and I believe that she legitimately loves that character.
I think she's
just really turned on by how good he is at bridge. That scene of them going and playing bridge in the first episode and the music cues and everything. Yep. It was just, it was beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's what the show does. It takes moments like that and does them really well.
I love how they pair slick editing and like the music cues with the mundaneness of going to a bridge competition.
Yep.
There's a guy who's like dealing cards. Instead of like every card going perfectly wherever, it's like he stumbles with his fingers and kind of like puts them a little awkwardly. Has to like realign them, stuff like that. And then like, it's just perfectly feels like Fargo.
The music use here is great. I mean, anyone who liked Legion should be watching Fargo and vice versa.
Yeah.
It's similar, the stylistic, you know, the look of the whole thing. It's beautiful TV. It's the soundtrack's great.
The show is run in a similar way for some reason.
I do feel these two episodes of season three are a little, they're edging a little more into the comedic territory than the first two. It seems like more like an all-out comedy.
Yes, but They tend to lead comedy in the early ones and then it becomes tragic. I mean, they definitely we're headed to the same territory they have with like the movie where the guys hire someone to rob their parents' jewelry store and it goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like you never, especially in Coen Brothers type movies, you never hire someone to take on your family because it's always going to turn violent. So Scoot McNairy, who's in here as Maurice LaFay, is a
so
great name.
Funny. I'm going to miss him.
He's only in a couple episodes, maybe, unless we see a flashback or something. But his whole how bad things go wrong and how you could see it the minute he hired him. Like, I mean, this is going to turn violent.
It totally felt like Fargo, both season one and the movie.
Yeah.
And going to the wrong place or the wrong situation happening for what should have been an easy job.
Yeah. And then on the other side, we've got the VM Varga, David Thewlis playing like this scary British gangster.
Oh, so weird and creepy.
And that whole thing, that takes a big turn in the second episode. I thought the moment with the lawyer in the parking garage was so good because I didn't see it coming.
Yeah, somehow that connects to the first scene we get from the first episode.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure how.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be one of those characters, I think, is the lawyer or an ancestor of the lawyer or something.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just amazing cast, great stories, great music, beautifully staged. Like, this show is what every TV show should aspire to be, in my opinion.
It's like the next three shows we're talking about, Fargo, Leftovers, and Better Call Saul, the cinematography on all of them is phenomenal.
The thing about Fargo that it's Leftovers can be a little heavy, and Better Call Saul can be a little slow. And I love both those shows. Don't get me wrong. I love both those shows. But I was thinking Better Call Saul was like, oh, this is my favorite show on TV right now. And then Fargo came out. I'm like, nope, right. It's Fargo.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I will say that the one negative thing about Fargo is sometimes it will go into tangents a little more than the other shows, and sometimes those really pay off, not just with visuals, but with character moments, but sometimes they don't.
Okay.
Sometimes it's just a gamble. So you'll get a 5 or 8 minute chunk that just kind of sits there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love this show as well.
But it's
definitely not my number one of these three.
Really? What's your number one, Grant?
The Leftovers! Oh, man. Do you guys want to get into it?
I'm about to do the Dance of Joy.
Yes! Okay, what'd you guys think of that title sequence first off? Hey, guys, we're going to spoil everything about this.
Yep.
Because I can't help myself.
Yep.
But let's talk about that title sequence first off.
So, I have never seen an episode of Perfect Strangers.
What?
Never. Never, ever.
Oh, well, Mike, what did you think?
So here's the thing. I didn't know that music, so I didn't get the gag.
You didn't know it immediately?
No.
Oh, man.
But I loved it for the juxtaposition.
Okay.
And then it was explained to me later. I was like, oh, that's even funnier.
Yeah.
I had that spoiled for me.
Oh.
I watched it on Tuesday, and it might have been a Twitter post or something. But I was like, oh, fuck, I wish I hadn't had that spoiled. I knew Mark Lynn Baker was going to be in the episode, so I was looking forward to that. But yeah, I did have that spoil. But still, it was like a really exciting moment when it happened.
By the way, Mark Lynn Baker, how good is that guy here?
Yeah, he's great.
I mean, he was kind of like he was a throwaway joke that was kind of put in this show.
Yeah.
Like, one of the writers just had this idea, kind of a silly idea that, like, what if all of the cast of Perfect Strangers were one of the people that disappeared?
Yep.
Like, wouldn't that be weird that all four of them, the two lead guys and the two lead women, all disappeared? And then they go, wait, what if Mark Lynn Baker, he didn't actually disappear, but he saw that his other three did, and like he couldn't handle it, so he like ran away, went into hiding in Mexico, and so they have a nod to that in the second season, and for it to come back in this third season, and just like not only that, they fully embrace the joke of it first off.
Yeah,
in an episode called "Don't Be Ridiculous," which was the catchphrase from the show.
Yep,
that Baukey would always say, "Don't be ridiculous."
Oh, okay.
Now you
know. I get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Anyway. Like they embrace that. That is what's going on with this episode, and then put him as himself in the episode. I love it. I love that. Like they start talking about the actual similarities between Nora Durst's character losing three people close to her and the statistical comparison to him losing three people. He's like, do you know what the chances are? And she knows right off the top of her head because she lost both her kids and her husband, which is such a statistical anomaly that like people consider her one of the like most affected people on the planet with how bad the 2% disappearing affected her.
Yeah, this was a great episode, not only for the Marlene Baker stuff, but for Carrie Coon. Like, my favorite episode of The Leftovers is from season one.
Yeah, when she goes to New York.
When she goes to New York.
Yeah, me too.
It's all her.
Yeah, for sure.
And this was kind of another, like, it was almost a sequel to that.
I would definitely call it a sequel. They're definitely calling back to it, yeah.
So, I mean, I want to jump into just starting from the beginning then, if that's fine.
Well, before, can I just say, on April 13th, of this year, I had a Facebook post that says, I think Mark Lynn Baker is to blame for everything on The Leftovers. I didn't exactly get it right, but I did call that Mark Lynn Baker would have a deeper presence on this show.
Nice. So if we start with the introduction, we see that the Tower Man, the guy who's been like chilling in the tower and proselytizing and ignoring everyone else and being the most devout possible, we see him fall off the tower and die.
Yep.
And then it jumps right into the interview that Nora's conducting with people, which we're led to assume, because she's involved, people are claiming it was a disappearance based on, you know, last week's episode where she's like, if they claim it's a departure, they go through me.
Yep.
And like, oh, so people are trying to claim that because they tried to do a cover up. And it was fascinating to just kind of watch how they're doing this back and forth. And the wife who you see is talking to her.
Brett Butler.
Brett Butler.
Yeah. Another early 90s sitcom star.
She was in the last season. She was one of the people outside the gate. Yeah. So you see that she was one of the people waiting to get into Jardin. And then in this past 3 years, I guess she's just been posted up by the tower helping them out.
She was such an interesting presence last year. They just had to bring her back. I'm really glad they did.
Yeah.
I mean, we're starting to see, though, like a lot of these characters, I don't know if they're getting phased out. Like we see the daughter, what's her name, Maggie?
Right.
Like we see that she
moved away.
Yeah, she's like, this might be the last time we see each other. And that might be the case because they might just like bounce to Australia.
I think that's true. I think her story is more or less done.
Yeah. I mean, and then I'm not sure if we're just about done with like Tommy and the Murphys.
That I'm not sure about Tommy because of his direct link to Kevin. And I think that's gonna tie in. And I'm also not sure about the Murphys because they made the choice to put him with Lori. And I feel like that's a reason to keep them in Kevin's life. Like, I feel like there's maybe a version of the show where they go to Australia and we never see what happens in Jardin again. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's the version we're going to see. I think it's going to keep flashing between the two of them.
I don't think so either, because what this show has done each season, and it's doing it again, you know, the characters, it kind of like Silicon Valley. The characters get to a place that's seemingly okay, but then things start to fall apart again.
Right.
Like, in this episode, it's underlined that Nora and Kevin are together and they're committed and everything should be okay.
Yeah, but they're not okay.
But it's not okay. It's falling apart. I think we're going to see that for Amy Brenneman's character and the guy she's married to.
Lori and
John Murphy.
John Murphy. For everybody. And I definitely don't think we're done with Michael, the Murphy's son, because he obviously put the book of Kevin on the internet.
You think that's how it got up there?
For sure.
Yeah, because there was that scene in the premiere where Kevin walks in and he just slams his laptop shut and Kevin's like, you looking at porn?
Yep.
No.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Now, I wasn't here last week. So I didn't get to talk about the first episode back.
Yeah.
But what struck me about the first episode was how light and optimistic it was for a lot of it, like 3 years later. And I felt like they were really hitting on that acceptance, you know, last stage of grief. The Leftovers all about grief. And so I thought it was interesting to show that this, like, Kevin's gotten his life back together. Everything seems great. You know, the town is sort of functioning. And to blow all that up at the end of it, and now we're right back into where we are. So they clearly are maybe more in denial.
Everything's great.
Yeah.
But he has to put a bag on his head in order to feel alive again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and she can't let go the idea of maybe I can see my children again.
Yeah.
She can't move on.
Yeah, she can't let that go. Yeah.
I mean, I love that Nora ends up, like, confronting Kevin. Especially like how that resonates after all the shit she goes through this episode.
Right.
But when she comes in and like she finds him there, and it isn't like this situation of like, what is going on or how could you?
She gets
it's
it.
It's just like, oh yeah, you know, I used to have call girls come and shoot me in the chest in the first season. So it's cool.
I always love when, because neither of them are very good at communicating with each other, but they are perfect for each other because they're broken in similar ways. And so when somehow accidentally they're confronted with each other's damage, they're able to handle it better than another partner would be, which I think is really great. My question to you guys, do you think that Nora is trying to run a sting on these people, or is she looking for her kids, or is it both at the same time?
It's both.
That's what I think, too.
No, it's definitely both. I mean, what we saw in this episode was the science, I guess the heart versus head of Nora. Right.
Yeah.
Because she's definitely a skeptic, but inside she wants to believe because she wants to see her kids again.
Right.
So, yeah, she's definitely split down the middle between being the skeptic and wanting to overturn all these stones and say, no, all this is bullshit. But there's a big part of her that wants to believe, wants it to be real, and wants to see her kids again.
I mean, the part where Kevin says he wants to, let's have a kid, and she just laughs at him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hilarious and it's heartbreaking. Like, given everything that we've just watched her kind of go through, I mean, it was exactly a don't be ridiculous kind of moment.
Yeah.
But I love that. Like, she asks him, like, why would you want to do that? You're happy, right? And he's like, yeah. And she's like, so am I. And I was like, that's the biggest lie of the show.
Yeah.
You guys are not happy. And like, have them just try and, like, reaffirm that to each other. I was like, no. I mean, I was also thinking about this idea that, like, Kevin keeps putting the bag on his head. And if it's, like, not autoerotic asphyxiation,
no.
But what if it's auto-asphyxiation in the sense that, like, when you choke and then you kind of get that release from it,
yeah.
It gives you this, like, rushing sense of euphoria.
Right.
And maybe that's, like, another, like, form of like self-medication he's kind of doing for himself?
Maybe. I don't read it that way.
Against his depression?
I don't read it that way. I think every time he puts that bag on his head and tapes it closed, he's planning to die. And every time he stops himself, because he knows when he dies, he goes to that place with the international assassin. Like he's experienced the other side. And he's not sure he can die either.
Do you think that's the other side, though, of this reality?
I don't know what that is, but I know that Kevin has a special relationship with it. And I think that part of him wants to explore that. And that's why he does that every day. I don't think it's anything as mundane as trying to get an oxygen rush.
Can we go into a theory I read?
Yep.
Okay. I read this fan theory about especially playing into the idea of Nora potentially contacting these scientists based on what Mark Lynn Baker was saying, mm-hmm. that there's this radiation that they can blast you with and they can blast you to the other side.
Yep.
A, first off, people were speculating that end scene of the first episode where we see old Nora. What if that isn't old Nora, or so much as it's Nora who just got blasted with radiation, so she's looking hella old and like messed up. But maybe it's not as far in the future that as we were thinking.
That's possible.
That could be possible, because she did look more bleached out in the face and old, right?
Yeah, a little bit more Doc Brown going on there.
Interesting, yep.
Okay, but this other one, and this is completely out there, I don't buy it. Just because of how the show structures itself to be relatively realistic, I guess, and grounded. Mm-hmm. But one of the theories is, what if there are two worlds buying into this? Like, there are people in a different plane of existence. What if there's a whole universe where 98% of the population disappeared from Earth and the 2% are living in like this ghost kind of other side, I guess?
There's two reasons I don't think they'll do that.
Why?
One is, I think that'd be an unsatisfying reveal. I think that's an unsatisfying.
It's
the
like
other
Fringe, man.
And the other thing is, if you do it and there's no more seasons, that's going to be really disappointing, and they got to know
that.
Well,
that's not what the show's about.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's crazy Fringe Town. I don't see it happening. By the way, I also want to debunk the Nora theory, because if Nora is old woman because she got blasted by radiation, how does that explain old man Kevin?
In the second episode?
Yeah.
There is no old man Kevin.
Yeah, there is.
Where?
He's in Australia. He's being a sheriff.
Nope.
You don't think that's
not him?
It's Kevin.
It's a Kevin.
It's a Kevin. It's
I think. I don't know.
No.
If you
see his dad in the hut. You see Kevin Garvey Sr. pop out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Looking his same age. So the other guy.
I guess that's true.
You know, and yeah.
Justin Theroux does not age to be this cranky Australian man in 20 years, I don't think.
Who does not have those six-pack abs. Yeah.
I thought it was possible, you know, that many years, living that long in Australia, you could develop the accent.
I mean, That's Kevin Sr. living in there, and you know the idea that they're looking for a Kevin, and there's two Kevins living together,
yeah.
And all the Kevins of the show all happen to be police chiefs. All of this is weird.
I have a new fan theory for you.
Yeah,
it's going to be revealed that the 2% of people who vanished were all Kevins. And
everyone was Kevin.
Yeah,
Nora's was Kevin. Two kids, Kevin.
They're
and
both
Kevin.
Named Kevin and Kevin. Their husband was named Kevin. It's weird that she
it's
married
like George Foreman. Did he name all
and,
of his kids
and
to Birch?
They were the only Kevins who were not taken, and that's why they had to go to Australia.
Oh shit!
I want to know. Did the Wu-Tang Clan get departed as well?
Oh shit! Like, all of them
like,
are gone.
Like the entire Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah, everyone's got to be talking about that. Then. the guy who played Kevin in Australia.
Yep.
The one that gets drowned.
Yep.
His name is Damien Garvey in real life. Last name Garvey.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did you guys think because all the technology was failing with Nora?
Yeah.
What did you think that was trying to get across?
I thought that was a destiny kind of thing. Every time that she tried to ignore the truth of her mind, mm-hmm. technology wouldn't cooperate with her.
Okay.
And I feel like that was a weird destiny kind of thing.
Well, I think, you know, she hit four roadblocks. The first three were technology related. There's the kiosk at the airport where she was trying to hit the child on the lap button. Oh, you know, obviously, like a reminder that she had kids and now she doesn't have a kid. Yeah. She didn't have Lily. She didn't have her own kids.
Right.
You know, that's fucked up. The navigation wouldn't let her go see Lily when she was trying to go see her in town. She had to resort to a regular map. And then the airport exit gate wouldn't open to let her leave to go, like, see Kevin. And then finally, she was pulled over by Tommy, which I thought was, like, another kind of, like, roadblock. And it seemed like with the first three, like, you know, she's confronted by all these things that are trying to like prevent her from like moving on, but she, you know, is able to push past that with force.
Yeah.
Force of will. And like when Tommy pulls her over, the conversation kind of goes in a different direction where, you know, she's trying to process her grief, but like even he won't allow her to have that because he goes, look, I never even left Lily for you.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even know you existed. You're trying to like blame me and say like this, that Lily was yours. I left it for my dad. I didn't know about you.
Yeah.
And it like, it strips away that one other like element that she's kind of clinging to.
Yeah.
And I mean, whereas like the other thing, she can kind of like fight against the machine and like still get where she's going. I think that breaks her in a way that causes her to just like lash out in a separate way.
Yeah.
When she prints out that picture and says, fuck you to all the believers of that Tower man disappearing.
Well, I read that also as she's saying, I can't have my kids back. Then you don't get to believe in this thing about your husband.
Yeah.
If we're all going to confront reality, let's all confront reality.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. A couple other things I thought were interesting to note. In the hotel, Nora's wearing a white robe. I read this one off of Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
But she's wearing a white robe and smoking on the bed while watching all those grief videos, which it's a little nod to the GR.
I'm glad the GR got drone striked, by the way. I hope we never see them again.
Yeah, you think we're just completely done?
I hated the Guilty Remnant.
I like the visual of the GR, but not really the whole idea.
Yeah.
It was a little murky.
I'm glad to be rid of them.
Yeah, I think they played their part for two seasons, and I'm okay with them being gone. I didn't hate them, though.
I generally found their story the least interesting of all the stories.
When Nora was at the airport, there's a departure sign behind her, and it was blank. Underneath, there's no departures on the sign. I thought that was a pretty good little nod there. And, we didn't even talk about... Oh, before we get to the tattoo, Matt... When Nora goes to talk to him,
mm-hmm.
he has a nosebleed.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't just... Damon Lindelof does not put a nosebleed in a story without it meaning something.
Chekhov's nosebleed?
Yeah, it's a donkey wheel, you know, being turned or whatever. But it could potentially be that his cancer is back. He had leukemia.
Yeah, that's right.
That they talked about in the first season. Or another theory someone had was that he gets punched in the face because he helped post the book of Kevin online. Which I was like, if they jump back to his story, they show stuff from his perspective.
Yeah.
He could have just come from getting punched in the face when Nora comes to the house.
I do like that they do that. I do like that each episode is sort of a focus on a particular character, and that's a thing they've been doing since the beginning.
Yeah. That's a Lindelof thing as well. He likes doing that.
It's a good idea.
That's pretty punchable, too.
So, Grant, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
How come you haven't done a Leftover-specific podcast?
We talked about it, but we didn't really follow through.
Yeah, it just takes a lot of time to do
it's a lot of time.
Separate thing, right?
You're very into this. You're more into this than I've been with Terriers, I think.
I'm like sweating. I'm like so excited about it. Oh, it's hot in here. Oh, yeah. So that tattoo and the trampoline scene.
Yep.
That's kind of the last thing we need to cover.
That was so good. That was one of the best. And Fargo did great music cues, but that may be the best. That may be the music cue of the week. That was so good.
I paused the TV when she first gets her cast off and covers up the Wu-Tang Clan. And I was like, is that a Wu-Tang band logo? Band?
The Wu-Tang band.
Big fan.
But as soon as I saw that, I was like, what is she doing with that? That's hilarious.
So good.
What a weird little Easter egg.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, nope, that's a huge plot point they're waiting to get to later.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. It's something the Leftovers did really well in season two, and I think it's doing even better in season three. There's lots of jokes. There's lots of comedy.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of really sublime comedy, but the things that are planted as seemingly jokes have such deeper resonance.
Well, there has to be comedy or you'll kill yourself after you finish watching the episode.
Well, yeah, but they're not just jokes to lighten the mood. They mean something deeper, like the Marklin Baker thing could have been a throwaway thing, but they turned it into this wonderful dramatic piece of storytelling.
Yeah,
I agree. The same thing with the tattoo. You know, it has this really emotional it's a signifier, this really emotional arc for Nora.
And it was such layers, like drilled down, like, you know, like
indeed.
Literal and you know,
dermatological.
Yeah, dermatological. Emotional, but like the fact that she had a cast on to hide her embarrassment of the tattoo.
Yeah.
The fact that she had the tattoo to hide the tattoo that was previously on there because she was embarrassed by that.
And, right.
And all of it, like, you know, you think, yeah, exactly. You think something's just going to be like this joke.
Mm-hmm.
And then, oh, it's, it's something that's really painful.
Yeah.
And I'm always impressed. I think this is a thing that they fixed from the first season, like moving into the second season and then this third one, that like they used to like, they would hit on the heavy notes and like it would be, they would really let the sadness kind of weigh on us, the audience, and just like wash over us. And here they'll hit on something really sad and then they'll follow it up with something like bizarre or zany kind of quickly. Because, like, you know, you can sit after the episode and digest it. But I don't think they want that tone to be as heavy as they did in the first season anymore. So, yeah. Like, we had that heavy scene where she's talking about, like, what the tattoo was.
Yeah.
And then we jump to them jumping to Wu-Tang
yeah.
on the trampoline. And it's yep. fantastic.
But I will say, the thing about Leftovers that I can understand why it puts some people off is it is a depressing show. It's a dark show. I mean, the opening sequence, whether you set it to the theme from Perfect Strangers or not, is so evocative and so affecting. The notion of losing people and the pictures they chose and the way you see like the mom fading out from her kids and the lost people, it puts you in mind of things nobody wants to really confront. Like, that's not something you want to think about. And to be able to do that in an entertaining way is a really impressive task.
I mean, this show reminds me of 6 Feet Under, just having yeah. to go through the process of dealing with grief and loss yeah. and how you kind of confront that.
Yeah. But it's really heavy. Your head has to be a certain place to be able to enjoy that kind of show.
But yeah. it's pushing a new territory because it's about how people process a new kind of loss, because they don't know whether or not the people they lost are coming back. They don't know where they are. They just cannot ever find that closure.
Right.
And I don't think there's yeah. ever been a TV exploration of that idea.
Yeah, this yeah. is fascinating. Last note, in the credits, Lindelof and Tom Parada, who wrote the initial story this yeah, is based off
that's
of,
right.
yes.
they are credited as The Lonely Donkey Kong and Specialist Contagious.
I noticed that.
Which and is
I
was, the Wu-Tang yeah, name generator.
The Wu-Tang name generator, yeah.
So great.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I think I spent enough time on this. I'm sorry. Let's jump back into Better Call Saul,
now episode 3. You got to enjoy this. It's the last season of Leftovers. You got to enjoy this.
I'm going to be back next week talking your ears yep. off. I might actually branch it off into its own separate thing and cut the conversations from last week's and this week's episode or something. I don't know.
The Leftover Omnibus, like a trade paperback. I like it.
I just can't stop myself.
So Better Call Saul season 3.
Yeah.
Oh, man, this is, I love the divergence that Jimmy and Mike's story are kind of taking. We're going to get to a point where, but they'll interact, but Mike now knows Gus. Mike mm-hmm. has met Gus. And we know Saul never meets Gus until Breaking Bad. So he can't meet Gus. He can't know who he is.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah. Okay. He didn't know who Gus was.
Huh.
But he knows Mike.
He knows Mike.
Because Mike's the guy he recommends to Walt.
So that's going to be interesting mm-hmm. to see that story, because Mike is about to learn a whole lot about Gus's operation that we already know. But Saul can't. Jimmy can't.
I mean, the scene with Mike putting the shoes or throwing the shoes up there,
yeah.
it's just a classic Vince Gilligan-esque, yeah. Like bizarre and like weirdly shot. Like, what are they going to do?
Yep.
How are they going to make this yep. all work out? And it's so fascinating to watch this kind of puzzle like come together, and they go, oh, shoot the toe, get dust on there.
Right.
Yeah, some of my favorite scenes from Breaking Bad were Mike doing his whole solitary workmanship.
Yeah.
And this show just leaves so much space for those kind of sequences. It's yeah. really rewarding.
Yeah. I also like that Mike is such a no-nonsense guy. It makes sense that he and Gus would get along so well, because both of them have no time for bullshit.
Pragmatic.
Yeah. And so the two of them, when they get... Because if you get someone like Mike, who's like a little more aggressive, who met Gus, he'd get in his face about interfering with his business, and guess what? I've been killed.
Mm-hmm.
Mike's practical. Mike just is like, yeah, okay, give me a reason not to do this. And he's like, you know, he realizes that they have similar goals and he can work with him. Mike doesn't care. He's been broken by what happened to his son. So, you know, whatever he does, it doesn't really matter, as long as his granddaughter stays safe.
Yeah.
So I really like the two of them together. I love that it was sort of played very coolly, very low key. Like, there's not like a big moment. We all know how important that moment is, but there was no like, they didn't go over the top in the way it was shot. They didn't use a big music stinger. They didn't do a big like dialogue break. It's like, It's here, and if you know, then you know.
Hi, I'm Gus.
Yeah.
Mike, nice yeah. to meet you. Let's immortalize this handshake. I hope your face never blows off. What a weird thing to say.
What a weird thing to say.
Let's cut to the next scene. That's how I'd write the scene.
But the other story that I think is interesting is going on is the stuff between Chuck and Jimmy. Because that's the one, we don't know where that's going. We know ultimately that Jimmy becomes Saul. But we don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy and Ray. Not Ray. Ray Seahorn's the character, the actress name. What's the character name?
Kim.
We don't know what's going to happen with Jimmy and Kim. We know that Francesca's going to be his assistant for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking forward to watching that relationship change. By Breaking Bad, she hates him. Mm-hmm. She just hates him. Mm-hmm. But now she likes him, and I'm curious to see how that goes. And we don't know what's going to happen with him and Chuck. But I don't know about you guys. There was a think piece going around the internet about... Is Chuck the Skyler?
I think I brought that up last week.
And no, fuck that. Chuck's an asshole. Chuck is not the Skyler. Chuck deserves all the scorn he gets. That scene where he was out there with Jimmy, lording it over him, telling him that ultimately, after he goes to jail, it's all going to be better. And he's like, I wanted you to be better. And when you get out of jail, I'll help you be better. And I'm like, no, you wanted to be better, but not better enough. Because when he tried to become a lawyer on his own, on terms, your terms, you fucked him over.
It's true.
Chuck is an asshole.
Chuck is an asshole.
And a narcissist. But and he is not Skyler.
Yes and no. You know?
Chuck's the bad guy here.
Jimmy's a bad guy too, though.
Jimmy's a bad guy too, and he becomes an even worse guy later on.
But that's because of Chuck.
You think so?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, where's his accountability? It's also because of him.
If Jimmy's
been a con artist like forever.
But he was not when he was working with H&M. He was trying to go the right way. He was trying to be a... He was always going to be a little slapdash as a lawyer. He was never going to be as buttoned up as Chuck wanted to be.
True, true.
But no more slapdash than Kim can be from time to time.
Right, you're right.
He could have been Kim. He could have been someone who's occasionally unconventional, but generally is a really good lawyer. Like, we've seen that Jimmy is a really good lawyer. And so... If Chuck had not cut him off at the knees and done everything he could to sabotage him from getting that position, there's every possibility Jimmy could have become a much less dangerous chimp with a machine gun. And I think that's on Chuck entirely. I don't put any of that on Jimmy. At some point, Jimmy's like, I got to survive. I got to be who I am. And my brother has cut off every possibility of me becoming a better person. So I might as well fall back on what I do.
When he got the great job at Davidson, Maine on his own, Jimmy fell into doing his other antics and shit.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, it's like that's an innate part of him. And... You know, I don't disagree that Chuck's not an asshole.
Yeah.
But Skyler was an asshole at times to Walter as well, from a lot of people's perspective.
But Skyler didn't cut him off of the legs as much. Skyler was trying to...
force him to do things that he didn't want to when he was already going through some shit.
Yeah, that's true. It's different. I don't know. Chuck's sort of... patronizing thing. Yeah,
it's more complex. The relationship between Chuck and Jimmy here is more. It's less black and white than the one between Walter White and Skyler, because obviously she was always right.
Yeah. Well, and I love seeing Jimmy and Kim. I love that Kim is standing by him in all this, because you keep waiting for that breaking point. He keeps waiting for that breaking point.
Yeah.
Like, he gives that big speech. He goes in her office, gives a big speech about how he doesn't want her to help and it's his problem and all that.
Like, here's the thing: we don't know if Kim is in his life at all during Breaking Bad, do we?
No, we have no idea.
No.
I don't think so. That's not the impression I get.
I mean, the assumption is that he is on his own as a schmuck lawyer, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't go home to anyone.
But we never actually see it.
But we never see it.
Oh, man. What if he was married to Kim and he had to leave her behind for the end of Breaking Bad, and that's the big reveal at the end of Better Call Saul? That Kim's just, like, waiting back in New Mexico wondering what happened to Saul.
That could be it.
That'd be really rough.
That wouldn't make any sense.
I don't think so. I think he's going to lose her before that.
Mm-hmm.
So our good friend and former TV dude Johnny was complaining earlier that the show is just too painstakingly slow. We already know the end of the story for Mike.
Yeah.
And that there's ultimately... The feud between Chuck and Jimmy is somewhat trivial, and and they keep rehashing the same thing or going back to, you know, you're not good enough and I hate you back and forth. He just thinks it's harping on that too much, and so he was saying it's boring.
But it's escalating.
That's not an unfair estimation, honestly. I can see this show is very deliberately paced. Like, this is made for people who want to watch this show, and they are – it's definitely a show where I can see someone saying it's too slow or – I know where everything's going. If you don't like prequels in general, this is a prequel.
Yeah.
But I think it's masterful. I think that the execution of everything is so good and the character work is so good. And just seeing Bob Odenkirk become this amazing dramatic lead as well as just a comedic genius is all worth it to me. I can see totally where Johnny's coming from and where other people, I've heard this before, that it's too slow or it's boring. And if someone were to put that to me, I could say, yeah, no, I get where you're coming from, but it's still one of my favorite shows on TV.
Me too. And, I mean, you mentioned Bob Odenkirk, but Michael McKean.
Oh, Michael McKean.
Everything. Yeah. I mean, what a gift it is to see these two comedic geniuses facing off against each other in these great dramatic roles.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, the show's just a gift.
And Rae Sehorn, who's a fairly new actress, who's fantastic in this role, standing up. I mean, the cast here is pretty impressive. Giancarlo Esposito, who's not getting a lot to do, but who's great in this role.
Jonathan Banks.
Who's
middle name is actually Cantankerous.
Yeah, it might as well be. Yeah. And I mean, I just think you put all these talents in a room and you get what, honestly, I think Vince Gilligan is one of the best writers and showrunners in TV. Mm-hmm. I would put him, he's definitely in the top five. He might be in the top three. This guy knows how to run a show and knows how to do interesting, unusual stuff with it. And so I'd watch these guys do a show about just about anything.
Agreed.
Cosign.
Well, all right, guys, let's go ahead and wrap it up there because I got to get writing on my show notes for Leftovers next episode. Talk everyone's ear off there. Listeners, we'd like to thank you for checking out the show. Mike Moody, we'd love to thank you once again for joining us.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
You're becoming a regular TV dude.
What's the name of Mike's podcast again?
TV Marvel Binge.
Mike,
close. Very
Marvel,
close.
Marvel TV Binge.
There it is.
There it is.
I know it. He also does Mr. Roboto.
Yeah.
And he does the TV
on the pod.
On the pod.
There it is.
Man, don't quiz me live on this. You know I don't edit our episodes.
It was an hour ago. I thought you'd remember.
I can't remember anything we just discussed.
It's only leftover, all leftovers knowledge. It has to take up some kind of room.
That's all I have room for up here.
Yeah, you totally forgot your phone number, didn't you?
All right, we're out. We're out. TV News out. The TV Dudes is an independently run podcast and a member of the Permanent Record Podcast Network. We are exclusively listener supported. If you'd like to help us out, please go to patreon.com/TV Dudes. You can like us on Facebook and Twitter @TV Dudes and help us out on iTunes by giving us a 5-star rating and writing a review. To find out more about us, go to thetvdudes.com and permanentrcrd.com. I'm Grant Davis. Thanks for listening.